Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's Greg Hill.
And I'm Courtney Cox.
Did you know that the Greg Hill Show is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, every highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. And whenever works for you.
A little after 3 o'clock here on WEEI Afternoons. Less than an hour to go till the NFL trade deadline. I don't hear any sounder, so I guess we're not checking in with Dan Ball for any moves for the Patriots. So keep waiting.
As far as this teardown for the Jets goes, I mean, if they have anything resembling competent GM and coach work over the next couple of years, 2026, two first, two seconds, 2027, three first round picks.
Yeah, so you might end up with a Sauce Gardner, a Garrett Wilson, a Quinnen Williams, and a
yep. Breece Hall.
Yeah, like you might end up with good young players like we thought they had a couple years ago that was going to start the next great era of Jets football. It'll all be about the quarterback, and we'll see where that goes. But it is 3 o'clock. Ted Johnson is here. Hey. The vest day. Oh, it must be fall. Vest time.
It is. It is fall time, baby.
You a vest guy?
I'm a huge vest guy.
Yeah.
Love the vest.
Got to have the room for the guns to move
around. You got your arms. If you ever watch me work out, I always go sleeveless.
Really?
So I just like my chest has to be warm. My arms can be exposed. So okay. That's how I like to feel when I'm working out. And so I take it over into my athleisure wear as well.
Andy, are you a cutoff sweatshirt guy when you're working out?
You got a smirk on your face. What do you got? Some rebuttal?
He's in a mood.
Let's go.
Do you not have the proper caloric intake over there?
That's good.
I need a bar?
We're good.
No, I like when I learn little snippets of the Ted Johnson.
Sleeveless workout, huh?
Big time. I'm very particular about what I wear when I work out. I have to wear. I wear the same combination. It's very odd. They're different sizes. The compression shorts are mediums. The shorts on the outside are 2X. The compression sleeveless shirt is a medium. The shirt that goes over the compression shirt is an XL. It's a whole thing, man. Yeah,
I've noticed.
Yep.
Threaten me with a good time, Ted.
Three
Johnson.
Pairs of socks on each foot.
At the same time?
Golly. Yes. Yep. So very particular, very OCD about my workout attire.
I was actually fine with all of it. It all made sense. Can you just give me real, like a 10-second, why three pair of socks?
Because my feet have to feel secure in the shoe. If my foot is moving at all, like even a little bit, I feel uncomfortable.
His foot wants a hug, Andy. What's wrong with a foot hug?
And does this go back to football?
You go, yeah.
You wore three pair when you played?
I wore two pair and I wore orthotics. So I put something in the shoe with two pairs of socks. Yes.
Wow. Okay.
You never want your foot sliding in the shoe ever.
Okay.
So it's that's how I do it, yeah.
Hey, Ted, while we're here, can I ask you a quick question about playing in cold weather?
Sure.
Eric Smith, the safety for the Jets, told me a long time ago that to deal with the extreme temperatures in certain games, he would put chili powder and Vaseline in his socks or his gloves. Yep. Is that true?
So guys would wear Vaseline, put it on their hands, and then put latex gloves over their hands, and then put the football glove over the latex glove. Mm. And that's how they would play football. I have done that before. It does work. It keeps your hands warm, believe it or not.
Hmm.
Very strange, right?
Yeah. Try that sometime.
So, Vaseline. Latex glove, glove over the latex glove. There you go.
You learn something every day from Teddy J here on WEEI Afternoons. It is 3:07:02. That means it's time for the three-point stance.
Green 19!
It's the three-point stance.
Just count to three.
That's three!
Three shall be the number thou shalt count.
Pierce for three. It's good.
Three fabulous flyers.
And the number of the counting shall be three.
Dot tip scores! Ties it 3-3!
On WEEI Afternoons.
Time for today's three-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons, brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, or your foot just needs a hug, you got to get Glassman. Call all sevens at 617-777-7777. 3 o'clock here on WEEI Afternoons, three hosts, each of which will present their stances on the biggest stories in Boston sports and beyond. Andy Hart, you will lead us off. You said you had a revelation for your three-point stance.
I did.
So are you ready for that?
I am.
All right, here is 60 seconds for that revelation. Go ahead.
So like so many of us probably were, I was watching Monday Night Football last night. I even watched a little bit of the pregame show. Sit down with Zach Prescott leading into Dak Prescott, not Zach, his cousin, leading into Cards and Cowboys. And there was so much going on in this game. Kyler Murray's hurt. Jacoby Brissett is starting. Jacoby Brissett is playing well. They're calling for Jacoby Brissett to be the permanent quarterback. Marvin Harrison plays better with Jacoby Brissett than he does with Kyler Murray. And for the Cowboys, Dak Prescott was talking about how his owner has admitted to him when it gets too quiet in Cowboys Nation, sometimes he just throws bleep out there to create headlines and make stuff exciting. And that made me think, do the Patriots have one of the most stable trios of power in the National Football League? And what I mean by that is the owner, the coach, and the quarterback. Kyler Murray's a $200 million backup right now in Arizona. The Cowboys, the coach, the quarterback is like, the owner's crazy. Sometimes I just have to put my earmuffs on. We saw it in New York where the coach was, I mean, the quarterback was being called out by the owner. And I started to think, if you compare owners, coaches, and quarterbacks, who are the most stable teams in the NFL? I think you'll find the Patriots measure up quite nicely. In fact, the best option I can come up with that's similar is the Broncos. New ownership, Sean Payton, and Bo Nix. But that's a good thing to have stability at those three positions, and the Patriots have it.
I mean, aren't we ignoring the Kansas City Chiefs?
To some degree, yes, except the coach is getting older. There's some stability questions there as how much longer will Andy Reid do this. Also, the ownership there is a little old school. They don't do well, for example, in the NFLPA survey about how you treat your
players.
Neither
do the Patriots.
No, I know, yeah. But they're fixing that. Your boy Mike Vrabel is fixing that. Him and Stretch have sat down, and they're fixing that.
No more bologna sandwiches,
huh? It's his billions of dollars that are being spent?
Well, you know, you need to rub the owner the right way so that he uses his billions of
dollars. You realize you're boasting about a team being, like, the most stable when literally the last 25 years prior, it was the most unstable.
Mm-hmm.
And the winning was there, but you think the head coach and the quarterback and the owner were, it was all, you know,
no, I think they
harmonious.
Are now. No, I think they are now. That's
yeah,
my point.
Yeah, for 1 year, this 1 year.
Well, yeah, I mean, it could ebb and flow. Who see, you know, attitudes and egos and successes and Robert turning down, but it's not the poop show that I think it is in a lot of other places. And I don't think it will be. And I think at the center of it is your guy. I think Vrabel is going to be very good as the intermediary, sort of the ownership, he goes to that flight, and then he goes down to the players and everything in between. I have a lot of faith in your guy, and so he's a key part of that. But I do. I think if you look around the league, your top 3, 4, 5 in most stable ownership, head coach, quarterback trios.
Yeah, and I mean, that was at the centerpiece of a slightly successful double dynastic 6 Super Bowl winning run for 20 years. So that should always be the benchmark. And the model. Who's the GM in Kansas City? I know Borgonzi used to be the assistant, and he left.
Veach, I believe.
Yeah. Brett Veach. That's right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's pretty stable. Yeah, they could be a little old school about things, but it continues to work, and they can, you know, they develop talent, Teddy. They can still rush the passer, defend the pass.
The front office, I mean, you know, Andy Reid's sons, you know, it's not like it's been perfect over there.
Oh, nobody's going to be perfect. Issues, so. Nobody's going to be. And I think a lot of people would say, hey, how come you didn't bring up the Eagles? I think the Eagles are a weird situation. I'm not sure how a lot of people feel about the quarterback. I'm not sure how the coach and the quarterback are aligned or not aligned. But
how about the Packers, Andy?
Well, that's weird because they don't have an owner.
Yeah, so I was going to say. So you have LaFleur, who I think is an underrated coach. You have Gutekunst, who's the general manager. You have to always make sure you say that carefully. And then you have Packers fans.
Yeah, so that's a weird one because they don't have an owner. And also the coach, I'm not as big a fan of his as you are. That's a guy that seems
to
go
Shanahan boat.
He goes 13-3 a lot and then loses a home playoff game. I don't like guys that go 13-3.
I mean, that's basically what the Green Bay Packers have done for a long time, though.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, only one Super Bowl win with Aaron Rodgers there.
I used to blame it on Rodgers, but he's gone, so now who do I blame it on? Well, apparently it's the coach.
So what was your thought on the Denver Broncos being the closest comparison?
Well,
you know, they had that weird transition from the Bolin family when Pat Bolin passed away, and then it turned into some sort of fight with his heirs, and then it got sold. So now they have Boku money at that end, and you bring in Sean Payton and Bo Nix. I think Drake May is better than Bo Nix, but Bo Nix went to the playoffs as a rookie quarterback, mm-hmm. and now he's got the same record as you as a second-year quarterback. Maybe at some point I just have to say, Bo Nix does a really good job leading the Broncos.
They have a much better defense than our defense.
Oh, they do, yeah.
So, I mean, that's helping him a lot, too.
But he's made plays when he's had to.
Yeah. But they also have a really good defense, too.
He is, Andy. It's a good point. I don't think we give Bo Nix clutch or winning time points the way we should, because we say things like, yeah, it's Sean Payton. Yeah, it's a good defense. Like, he does come up when they need him to.
Yep. I don't think he is consistently as good as, like, a Drake May, as an MVP candidate. But when he needs to, he makes a play. And I think that's all Sean Payton really needs him to do, especially as Ted points out, when you have a defense like that.
Text line, always on it, like Hawks, multiple mentioning Robert Kraft and rubbing in the same sentence is
there
probably not your best call.
Yeah, we don't need to do that.
No, and you just did, so I would probably recommend not doing it again. Fitzy, are you ready for your 3-point stance?
You know what? Let's talk a little football. Let's get hyped for a big game coming up.
Let's do it indeed with 60 seconds. Go ahead.
All right, Stan, can I have a little bit of that Good Morning Football action from today?
It's Draker Mayfield with an M-A-Y-E field. It's perfect. What the hell's going on out here?
You're welcome, everybody. We got to get a t-shirt.
We do, yeah.
We got to get a t-shirt for that one.
That would be Kyle Brandt and the Good Morning Football crew this morning coming up with the portmanteau nickname for Sunday's showdown in the Pirate Ship in the End Zone Stadium, once formerly occupied by Tom Brady. That's right, Patriots at the Buccaneers, New England against Florida. Who will plunder who? And I got to tell you, the hype train has officially rolled out. They're spending time on trade deadline Tuesday talking about this matchup of two potential MVP candidates and what honestly is the closest thing that I can think of to being a potential Super Bowl matchup. Now, you did have Lions at the Chiefs a couple of weeks ago. Lions have stumbled since. The Chiefs have stumbled since. But both of these teams have, I believe, correctly, only two losses on the season, each with MVP candidates, both whose coaches have a lot of shine on them as well. They've each had a couple injuries, but are coming into this game about as healthy as they can be, minus Mike Evans. I don't think I'm blowing too much sunshine up everybody's football backside when I say get ready for one of the biggest games of the year Sunday. You got Hello Friends and Romo on the call. Folks, we may have a Super Bowl preview in Pat's Buccaneers.
Yeah. Good. We'll see.
It's time to get hyped.
I don't feel like Ted's feeling it.
I don't know. I mean, it's two teams that are, 6-2 and 7-2. So
it would kind of stun me. It wouldn't stun me if either one of these teams made the Super Bowl, but if that combo together, I feel like those would both be surprise Super Bowl participants.
I would say so.
Especially,
I don't know if we have a lot of other AFC. I'm not sure if we have any other AFC, NFC matchups along the slate the rest of the way that we could point to and say, you know what, that too could be. We haven't had many. We've had some games of the year opening the week one with Ravens at Bills. We had Bills Chiefs last Sunday as well, but like, this is lumber versus lumber. You haven't had many of these thus far. I think it's going to be fascinating to watch because it's going to tell us a lot about both and if they really even belong in that conversation.
And we found out that Drake May is a big fan of Baker Mayfield. So for whatever that's worth in this game.
Yeah, and we is Baker Mayfield as big a fan of Drake May?
I don't know.
Believe that's Draker Mayfield.
I didn't care for that. I was actually confused by that.
Well, you see, because his name is Drake,
I know.
And the other's name is Baker.
It was like a Wheel of Fortune before and after kind of pairing. Yeah,
it was the hingent of names of two quarterbacks that are playing on Sunday.
And,
people hate it when I do it, too.
That's true, yeah. And Kyle Brandt, I'm sure, got some love for it. Okay, so we'll leave that one there. Big one coming up on Sunday for sure. You get the Romo and Nance treatment on CBS. Mm-hmm. Ted Johnson, are you ready?
I'm ready, bud.
All right, here is 60 seconds. Go ahead.
So the Celtics shot 51 threes yesterday. 51 threes. They made 11. So that's a 21% percentage of hitting your threes. Not very good. In fact, that's terrible. So let me just give you some of the stats that would bear out that the shooting of the threes, which is Joe Mazzulla's favorite stat, is basically three-pointers attempted. I'm going to give you some stats that would say that this is the worst thing you can do for this team. Right now, the Celtics rank 30th in pace of play, which is weird because I thought they were going to be running more this season. That's all we were told, and yet they are dead last in pace of play. They rank 30th in free throw differential. Okay, so it's the opponent's free throws attempted versus the Celtics' free throws attempted. They rank 30th in defensive rebounding, dead last in defensive rebounding, and they also rank 29th in three-point percentage. At right now, they are 31% as a team shooting 3 points. So all those three-pointers leads to a bad rebounding team, a bad free throw differential team because you don't get rebounds when you shoot threes, and you do not get fouled when you shoot free throws. And the pace of play is dead last in the NBA. And they, when they do shoot the threes, they're one of the worst, almost the worst shooting team in the NBA at shooting threes. So I say to you, Joe Mazzulla, why so many threes?
I say that too, but maybe just more generally, why indeed?
Yeah, you're not a fan. You're a bit of a hater. What happened to, am I wrong? Didn't we talk about, or sometimes I have these dreams, didn't we have a preseason game where we were talking about Scal had brought up some stat that they were having the most possessions or something, or fourth most, like they were up there in terms of possessions because they were pushing the ball, they were running, they were doing more. And then it got to regular season, and we just went back to old ways.
Went back to the old ways, I guess, yeah. I thought it was going to be a total shift in pace. I thought it was going to be up and down. It is not. I'm kind of shocked to see that they are 30th in pace. The Seas only have two players in the top 100 in three-point shooting percentage.
Yeah, they've been bad.
They're terrible. So, obviously, you got your boy Peyton Pritchard, who's shooting 21% from threes, and you got Derek White shooting 26%. Percent from three, so those two guys are really throwing off the average. But I just the shooting of the threes is, it doesn't favor what I think are their strengths, which is athleticism, moving the ball, and they're not good at rebounding. So you don't want to shoot as many threes. You want to get in the paint more, and they're not doing any of that. So it's just an odd season so far for the Celtics. Last night was pretty maddening.
So do you think he just isn't really acknowledging the roster and the team he has? Or is he just so set in his ways that he's like, yeah, we've missed threes before. We'll get hot at some point, and then all these haters will be watching the game and loving JB for three.
I just wonder if he can shoot other types of offenses. Does he, like, you know, is it so simple? Like, he literally just is like, we got to shoot a bunch of threes, and that's going to be my team, and get rebounds. Okay, we got to get rebounds. And
how the hell is that coaching? All right, guys, just run around and shoot a bunch of threes. Like, it's not working. They're pressing right now. That's what it really feels like to me, Ted. They're pressing. Everyone is trying to make up for the lack of size, the lack of offensive talent, and the lack of Tatum that's on this team. And you've got Jaylen Brown and right now, like, Derek White shooting 26%. That's 13% below his career average.
They don't know how to pivot to something else. Okay, the threes aren't falling. What's the next strategy? What can we get some backdoor cuts? Can we do some high screens? I don't see any shift in philosophy when their main philosophy is not working. Can we try something different? It doesn't seem like he wants to do anything different, or does he know how to do anything different? We've questioned whether, you know, he's confident in putting impound plays, and that's why he's so reluctant to call timeouts at the end of games, because he doesn't have confidence in putting an inbound play. You just worry about the coaching at this point, that they don't know how to maximize the abilities of the players that they have.
Absolutely. And they are 3-5, which basically means you're about 10% into the season. So I know it's still relatively young, but at some point you're looking up at the rest of the East, and you're not a playoff team, and you're kicking away games, and you're not shooting well. How long do you wait for it to come around? 617-779-7937. Squeeze in a couple phone calls here. Let's go to Brad in Warwick. He has a thought on those very Celtics. What's up, Brad?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey.
First of all, Ted, I got a whole new appreciation for you for your vest take.
Oh, thank you.
Vest is clutch for working outside in the fall and winter.
Yep.
No doubt about it. Very underrated. But the Celtics, I don't see spending a lot of time picking apart what they're doing wrong. I think the real problem is everyone's being asked to play like a rung and a half above where they are comfortable. And so you need Tatum back, and you need another legit, not a star, but you need a legit front court NBA starter. Until Brad Stevens gets a chance to wave his wand, I'm not expecting much special from this team. All right, peace, guys.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for the call, Brad.
The only thing I'll say to that, Brad, it's just, okay, so they don't have the personnel, so what are we going to not talk about the Celtics this year because they don't have the personnel?
Just give up?
Until they get Jason Tatum back and they get a new guy here, let's not talk about the Celtics. We got to talk about the Celtics. These are the guys they thought they had a decent team, a chance of, you know, at least maybe being a top five, you know, seed in the East. And right now they're hugely underperforming. They're like 12th in the East right now. So I just think you can squeeze more juice out of this than they've been able to at this point.
And the interesting point that he brings up too, guys, is the need for somebody in the front court. Obviously, their rebounding hasn't been very good, but isn't it fair to say that the biggest concern right now is the fact that they can't hit shots, something they're supposed to do? I would say as much as they've been out-rebounded to holy hell, and they cannot win when they get out-rebounded, I think they're 0-5 when they lose that battle or something like that, it's the shooting. It's the thing you're supposed to be built on this year. That's the biggest concern.
But shooting comes and goes for every team. What can you rely on night in, night out? Effort, rebounding, attacking, getting to the ball, ball movement.
When we
pace.
Talk about ball movement, you're ball talking movement. About the movement of the ball.
That's it. That's what I'm talking about. Exactly. So I just, there's the shooting. It's like, shoot better. Okay, well, there's going to be nights when teams aren't shooting good, and what do you do when the ball's not falling through the hoop? What do you adjust to? And they're not doing any adjustments to that.
But do they really even have – I think it's a fair question. Do they even really have, like, one or two great shooters? Like, you look at Golden State when it was the Splash Brothers. Like, you had two or three of the best shooters of the last 25 years, so no wonder why they would just make it rain from the outside on a regular basis. You wouldn't look at this team and say, like, man, they got a bunch of shooters on this squad. Like, it's Pritchard kind of, but he's an auxiliary bench player. Derek White intermittently. You're forcing a style of basketball that I don't believe fits or is conducive to the talent level on the team.
Agreed.
Yeah, and I would just say even their supposed known shooters aren't shooting very well. Right, that's correct. Supposed to be Pritchard, Derek White, and Sam Hauser off the bench. Hauser had that one great game, but last night he wasn't good. And Derek White and Peyton Pritchard basically haven't been good all year. So you have issues. We'll continue to take your phone calls on the other side, 617-779-7937. And up next, it's time for Ted Johnson to break down that one-point win that felt like a loss to some. What did Ted think about Patriots-Falcons? That's up next here on WEEI.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Greg Hill.
And I'm Courtney Cox.
Did you know that the Greg Hill Show is both a radio show and a podcast? You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch full episodes, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search for the Greg Hill Show, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Afternoons. That was one of those spatial audio things again that I was only hearing through my left ear, and I was worried my headphones were broken. Then when the music kicked up, it hit both ears. WEEI Afternoons. NFL trade deadline now 27 minutes away. Dan Ball, I didn't hear any sounder, so I don't believe I have any reason to go to you. So the Patriots have still not made an addition. This isn't fun, Ted.
Ain't going to happen, bud.
I'm with you, Ted.
Ain't going to happen. Nope. It's fun to talk about, and we get all worked up and geeked up and interview guys and just do a ton of talking about a month leading up to it. And then when it comes, it's just a, it's just not going to happen, man. It's just they don't make, can I just tell you, you got a new coaching staff. And I heard, I've heard Tom Curran say this, like, well, you got to strike while the iron's hot. I mean, if he's down. Their pace, what it comes down to a lot of times with these front office guys and these coaches? Job preservation. And if they make a move now that costs them down the road, then they're gonna be pissed. They are ahead of schedule. Nobody thought the Patriots would be 7-2. So the last thing they want to do is risk anything that is going to perhaps put their future in jeopardy. Because right now they got house money, they know it.
And so is anybody going to be that upset when the trade deadline is over in about 25 minutes and they don't do anything? No. No, because we still got a 7-2 team, and they know it. So it extends their job in their minds longer by not doing something that could be risky now. And they see it as they're playing with house money. Why risk? Why go all in right now when we're already ahead of schedule?
I hadn't thought about it from the job preservation
Always look at it from the job preservation standpoint. Coaches, front office people, they do things to keep their jobs as long as they can. Look at Daboll. Look at the Giants. Why didn't you go start with Jackson Dart? Why didn't you start with him at the beginning of the season? Because Daboll wanted to extend his he just knew. He goes, well, I got Jackson Dart in my back pocket. I'll let we're gonna go with the under the guise of he needs to learn from Russell Wilson. He needs time to develop. And that's him. He didn't want to start the clock. See, his clock starts to get him fired when the minute Jackson Dart steps on the field, and if he starts playing great, then he keeps his job. If he starts playing bad, then he's going to lose his job. So he's pushing it back by not starting him right away. That's how coaches think, man.
Yes, Dan Ball?
A good temperature check for Patriots fans. The Patch just tweeted 2 minutes ago a graphic of Drake May bragging about his passer rating. It has 47 responses in 2 minutes, all directly veiled either at Elliot Wolf or Mike Vrabel or hurry the hell up, guys. So that is where Patriots fans are on this matter.
Yeah, but Ted's right. We'll be disappointed at 4, and, you know, maybe we'll talk about it till 6. And then tomorrow, you know what we talk about? Mm-hmm. The 7-2 Patriots heading to Tampa Bay to take on the 6-2 Bucks
in
the game of the week. And
that's
it's
the
fun
NFL,
and
man.
It's exciting.
It just keeps going, man. You know, we get disappointed, but then we go, oh, we got something in front. We got to just let the pass go, man.
And you're right. There's basically, they're in a no-lose situation now. The season. Like, you've already won more games than some people thought you would win. You're going to win more than most people thought you would win when it's all said and done.
Drake May's playing what some people thought he'd be playing in his third year.
Yes.
So they're way ahead of schedule. So they're just going to tap the brakes a little bit, slow this thing down. So they're not going to do anything hasty or aggressive that's going to all get us all excited about, oh, they're really into win now. Yeah, they're into winning now and next year and the year after. They're not just all in on this year.
All right.
But isn't there anything to be made of the idea that, like, you're there, you never know if you're necessarily going to be back, Ted?
Nope. Not with this new coaching staff, no. Uh-uh. If this was Bill Belichick in his 10th year, 12th year, 13th year, maybe, but not first year head coach. Everybody's the first time head or coach here. They don't think like that. That's not how they think.
So we might not have any trades to talk about, but we got a game to talk about. Ted has lots of thoughts. Let's hear them.
It's time for a TED Talk.
In a pothole that time in the form of Ted Johnson.
This was a disappointing play. Patriots had momentum.
From three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson.
This guy is one of the best inside linebackers in football.
It's like playing hide-and-go-seek with the football. The snap of the ball, said hype.
On WEEI Afternoons.
TED Talks on WEEI Afternoons are brought to you by Boston Prolotherapy. If joint pain has you riding the bench, do what Ted did. Eliminate your joint pain with Dr. Franke of Boston Prolotherapy online at bostonprolotherapy.com. So, Ted Johnson, I think we're probably going to start where we usually start. It's usually about quarterback play. It's usually about Drake May. What'd you see from the second-year quarterback against these Falcons?
Well, I'm a little concerned about the ball security. Obviously, the ball, you know, he fumbled twice. He recovered one, and then one obviously was not recovered. I said to you guys in the post game, I thought maybe that the cold weather, you know, he poo-pooed the cold weather. I'm concerned about it. Just the ball just slips out of his hands. That ball's slick. I don't know if you guys ever, you know, handled an NFL football. It is not easy to grip. So and believe it or not, Drake May has smaller hands considering you want to compare his hand size to Josh Allen. It's night and day. He doesn't have the biggest hands. Cold weather. So I do worry about that. That's one concern for me. The sacks, he is responsible for a lot of the sacks that are happening. So right now they're second in the league in giving up the most sacks. Right now they're on pace to basically give up 65 sacks, which would be second worst last year. I mean, it's just too many. And I worry that that these hits will accumulate and be an issue. But a lot of the sacks are on him. He kind of runs into sacks. And so I put some of the sacks on him for sure. But what I got to point out is, you think about it, Drake May turns the ball over twice. They lose the turnover margin. They were minus two in the turnover margin, and still won the game. When has that ever happened? So the room for error, the talk of room for error continues with this team. But think about this. So Drake May threw for 220 yards. That's 70 yards more than that team averages a game in giving up in passing yards.
Mm-hmm.
He was blitzed 55% of the time. He is blitzed on average this year, every game, 40% of the time. So teams are sending pressure every single play, it seems like. He did not have his best blitz pickup running back in Ramondre Stevens. And after 18 plays, he did not have his second best wide receiver in Kayshon Booty. Six sacks in this game is also in the and I already mentioned the pass defense was the best in the NFL. He threw for 70 yards more than what they average, they give up. So when you consider all that, you go, you know what, Drake May, still pretty good, man. So Drake May is good enough to overcome the team's mistakes and his own mistakes as well. So that's just something to kind of keep in mind, is this team has more room for error than it's ever had since the Tom Brady days.
Real quick, he also was not as consistently hitting the deep ball as we'd grown accustomed to, which we knew wasn't sustainable. He'd been at a ridiculous rate. Did you think that was him just not having a great day with the ball down the field? Was he not on the same page with Pop Douglas a couple times? And if that's Booty, maybe it's a little different.
Look, I just think throwing deep with the Pop is a risky kind of thing. He's got to be wide open.
Yeah.
He's just not how many times is the ball just out of the reach of his hands, you know, because he's not very tall. And so, you know, those short intermediate passes, you know, you can be more accurate with the football. But when you're sending a little guy deep like that, he's got to be wide open. Like Tyreek Hill in this Kansas City offense, he's usually wide open.
Right.
Right. And on the big hits down the field to DeMario Douglas, he is usually wide open. But having said that, now that you brought up DeMario Douglas, four catches for 100 yards, he averaged 25 per. He might be the deep threat of this team if Kayshon Booty's going to be out for a while.
What about my buddy Josh McDaniels? How'd he do?
So the first touchdown to Pop was brilliant.
Yeah.
That was a great – I don't know if you guys saw the breakdown last night. We talked about this play, but he was what they did is they put Pop Douglas in the backfield as if he was a running back.
Yep.
And the Falcons defense didn't see it, didn't adjust to it, didn't acknowledge it. And they put Jalen Walker, the talented, obviously he had two sacks in this game, first-round draft pick edge rusher, man-to-man on Pop Douglas out of the backfield. And you know what bums me out? Because I said, basically, didn't I tell you guys that Travion Henderson was going to have a wheel route for a touchdown?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was basically Pop's
wheel route. He stole it from
yeah.
you.
So he switched Travion Henderson's position with Pop Douglas on that play in the red zone, hoping that they'd get that coverage. They got it. They exploited it, and so Josh was, again, very good at knowing where the weaknesses were and having a great game plan. And I thought they just caught the Falcons kind of with their pants down.
Real quick, was that luck or skill? Like, did they get fortunate that they got that perfect matchup from the Falcons side, or is that scouting and you know there's a decent chance?
I think it's scouting okay. and knowing anticipating what your opponent's going to do. It's the art of war. You win the battle before you even go to war because you know what their tactics are.
Up next, we'll continue with a TED Talk as Ted Johnson breaks down Patriots-Falcons, the one-point win on Sunday. That's next year.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's Greg Hill.
And I'm Courtney Cox.
Did you know that The Greg Hill Show is both a radio show and a podcast? You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch full episodes, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search for The Greg Hill Show, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
WEEI. Back here at WEEI Afternoons in the midst of a TED Talk, so let's get right back to it. Patriots defense, Ted Johnson. How we rolling?
Real quick, before we go on to the defense, let me Let me just mention one more thing about Josh McDaniels is the Patriots going into the game against the Falcons had five different receivers lead the team in receptions through eight games, which was the most in the NFL. After this past game, the Patriots now have six different receivers that have led the team in receptions through nine games, which is the most. What does that say? That says the offensive coordinator game plans differently every single week, but he also, they're spreading the ball around. It's harder to game plan for an offense when you don't know who's going to be highlighted from week to week. And that stat just kind of gives you that, gives you all the evidence you need to know in kind of how they think about themselves on offense, that you're not going to be able to zero in on one thing that they're doing week in and week out so that you can stop it. So it makes it, you know, that's how you, you know, that's how you work with an offensive line that isn't maybe as good as you thought, or a wide receiver group that isn't as good as you thought, or a running back group that isn't as good as what you thought. Is you scheme up, you come up with new game plans so that defenses can't lock in on what you're doing, and that's what Josh is doing, and I think that stat highlights that.
And I think we talked about that at one point. We were questioning, is it easier or harder defensively to prepare for a team where they have a true number one, and you know he's going to get targeted 14 times? And dealing with that, and the reason he's targeted is because he's really good, or an offense where you don't know where the targets are going to go, and that's what they've become. And I think, obviously, that puts a lot of pressure on Josh to scheme it up, and it puts a lot of pressure on Drake to execute it, right? He can't just do my Hoyer quote, drop back players over plays and say, I'm going to throw to this guy 12 times in a game because that guy might not be open.
That's
so,
right.
All right, that's the offense. Let's get to the defense.
All right, so the defense has got an issue, okay? There's two main issues with the defense that have me a little bit worried. One is I just think the pass rush isn't there. One sack. I think they've had two sacks in the last 2 weeks. The pressure rate is going down. We're not getting heat on the opposing team's quarterbacks. The blitzing has not been effective. They've been burned when they have blitzed. So they're not blitzing well. If they're trying to generate pass rush by blitzing, that's not working. And they're not getting home with a four-man rush. And so that is concerning. It's going to be something that I'm concerned about for the rest of the season. It's just the lack of pass rush. But really, the biggest thing is, and I've said this before to you guys, in 2001, I was on a defense that was number one rated red zone defense in the league.
Yeah.
So it was the proverbial bend but don't break. You could move between the 20s, but when we got to the red zone, you couldn't get in. And that, to me, that's obviously a very important two big situational categories that I look at every single week are third down and red zone. The Patriots were dead last in the red zone going into that game, and the Falcons, the three times they got in the red zone, they scored every single time. So they are far and away the worst red zone defense. It's basically like if a team gets to the 20-yard line, they're scoring 75% of the time, which is just inexcusable. And you go, well, what are the problems down there? Part of it is you saw what Drake London did to our shorter defensive backs. Marcus Jones was picked on.
Yeah.
They created schemes with stacks and bunches where that they got Marcus Jones one-on-one on Drake London. And you saw it's hard to defend a guy as big as Drake London when the ball's high-pointed like that. So the lack of size in our cornerbacks is going to be an issue in the red zone. And then I think our youth in the safety position is going to be an issue in our red zone because the younger guys, it gets confusing. You cannot, if you make one mistake in the red zone, you lean too far and you're out of balance or you get picked off a little bit and you have to recover, it's already too late. And that's what you saw in those touchdowns is guys just a second too late getting to their coverage and they exploited it. So the red zone is a big issue. But I will say this, the Patriots defense, they got a really good third down defense.
Yeah.
That's the money down. So they're fourth in the league in third down. They keep opponents to 33%. The Falcons were 1 of 10 on third down. So that kind of makes up for it. If you're going to be that good on third down, you know, you can maybe understand the issues on the red zone. But that, to me, is something they got to fix. It's got to be a lot better in the red zone.
Especially this game, they were the – whatever the opposite of bend but don't break is, because they got off the field a lot And that's lucky because if they had given up one more drive based on the way they were playing in the red zone, they might have lost the game.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing they were 1 of 10.
And that brings up one other point. I'm always curious about time of possession. They led that game by like 9 minutes. The Patriots are 4th in the NFL in time of possession. So they are keeping the ball. The defense isn't playing as much as other defenses, and that should bode well for them down the road.
Okay, I think a lot of people are praising this. I praised this with Fitzy to lead off the Six Rings post-game show. Mike Vrabel and his messaging, the consistency of his messaging, his post-game messaging, and the way he's tied it all together. What are your thoughts?
So I want to play a cut from the Friday presser before this Falcons game. And if you listen to him talk after the game, before the game, he's been saying this a lot in his press conferences, this kind of repeated message about what type of people he wants, what they are trying to do. Just listen to him. This was the Friday presser. Gasper was asking him questions about an article he was writing. Just listen to him talk about what he's looking for in this organization.
We're just trying to do what we feel like is best and what the players and the communication and me and the staff and Elliot and everybody else involved. That's all we're trying to do. Just trying to win games, get good guys, enjoy coming to work, coach it out of them, watch them have success, be excited for them. Like none of that goes into, well, they did it this way, we're going to do it the opposite. Like there's a lot of things and ideas that are good that you take from people. And there's some things that you come up with that on your own that's good. And then there's some ones that are clunkers. And when they're clunkers, you own it and change it and fix it.
So he's telling you, it's pretty simple. He wants to bring in good guys that are willing to be coached, that we want to see him succeed, and we want to be excited for him. And he just repeats those over and over and over again. So it's a very different culture than it's ever been around here. You haven't heard a coach say that around here since Pete Carroll. I mean, honestly. And I think that's the way to go. I love that Mike focuses on that part of the coaching. It's not just about coming up with great schemes. It's about how do you get these guys to play together, to want to come to work, so that when they open that door, they're not worried about low lights on Mondays. They're not worried about losing their job if they fumble the ball. I mean, you look at DeMario Douglas. You look at Ramondre Stevenson. You look at Steph Diggs. These are all guys that maybe in another regime would have been ousted, you know? But no, Mike has patience with them. He loves them up. They love him for that. You see the response. I think it leads to the winning. I really do. I think the way Mike is managing this team, the interpersonal skills that he has with these players, talking to Drake May on the sideline after a bad play, that leads to winning. That's my opinion, and I won't back down from that.
Well, thank you for inviting us to your TED Talk. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we see your calls lined up. We got about 3 minutes to go to the NFL trade deadline. What have the Patriots done? Well, spoiler, nothing so far, but there's a couple minutes left to do something. Mr. Vrabel will talk about what the Patriots and the rest of the league have done at the NFL trade deadline and your call, 617-779-7937, next here on WEEI.
It's a home run!
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's Greg Hill.
And I'm Courtney Cox.
Did you know that the Greg Hill Show is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can get every episode, every hour, every highlight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods, and whenever works for you.